Hello, dear listeners. Today I'm doing a video and audio with a guest from the Netherlands. Hello, Simba.
Hello.
And I hope I'm not botching this one too badly, but Simba agreed to talk with me about the upcoming elections in our neighboring country, the Netherlands. And as we have upcoming election in Germany, that is pretty much, let's do the status quo again, but with someone else as Merkel. You will have that pretty much the same elections in the Netherlands this week, but you will keep your good Prime Minister, Mark Rutte.
Yeah, basically. He's widely expected to win. He's number one in the polls and well ahead of the second place. I think he has about, if you take percentage of the vote, it's about 25% that he'll probably get, which is about 38 to 40 seats. And the next biggest party, the PVV, could get anywhere between 20 and 25 seats. So he's well ahead of the competition, and everyone else is below that. Everyone else is below 20 seats. So
yeah, 25% wouldn't be enough in Germany. but maybe we could talk about why that is pretty good in the Netherlands a little bit down the road. But before we really get into all this political stuff, tell my listeners who you are.
Oh, yeah, my name is Simba. I run a YouTube channel called My Take. I have about almost 5,000 subscribers. And basically, I talk about politics around the world, basically doing political analysis and political commentary on issues around the world. I did a video on the Netherlands a couple of weeks ago, and I'll probably do one again this weekend. But I've also talked about the United States, about the situation with Navalny in Russia, about the coup in Myanmar, about Emmanuel Macron, about a bunch of things, basically. And who knows, maybe I'll also talk about Germany when the elections come.
Oh, my God. You poor thing. Please don't. a little bit of warning. We just had a tiny bit of scandal. I don't know if you have gotten any information about it. The conservative party, CDU and CSU, they pretty much imploded because of a corruption scandal concerning masks and our representatives in the parliament, which were mostly part of the conservative party. They made money out of giving masks to the government. And it's pretty big right now.
Wow.
Look into that, and then you will lose every faith in people because the party is still at 30%.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like the Netherlands. I mean, maybe we don't have exactly that kind of corruption scandal, but we have another scandal which brought down the government. Because, of course, for those who don't know, our current prime minister is technically not our prime minister. He's our caretaker prime minister because he and his entire government resigned. Okay, yeah. Is he taking care of us? I guess, maybe.
Yes.
But yeah, no, he actually resigned.
Because I watched your video. You made a video concerning this child care benefits scandal. Turns out it's not a child care benefits scandal. It's a political scandal of really big proportions. As I could read in Germany about it, they said it was more like that the basic principles of the rule of law were violated.
Well, yeah, in many ways, yes, because basically how the scandal unfolded and what happened afterwards, that every institution meant to, you know, of course, in democracy, we have checks and balances. Every institution that was meant to be a check basically failed in this scandal. whether it was the parliament or the courts or other protection agencies. So I guess I can explain basically what happened.
Yes. What was this scandal?
Yeah, it's called the child benefit scandal because basically, you know, in the Netherlands, we have obviously a welfare state like in Germany. So there's many different kinds of benefits, including a child benefit, which is basically that if you have a certain income, that the government will subsidize daycare for your children, right? So this is for daycare payments for parents. And basically, it's the tax authority which both, you know, takes money from people in taxes, and they also give money in the form of the different welfare payments. So they run the whole system, basically. And so basically what happened is that the tax authority falsely accused 26,000 people and counting of basically benefit fraud and forced them to pay back the money plus fines plus interest, put them on fraud blacklists, which caused many of them to lose their jobs, get into massive amounts of debt. I think one person even committed suicide. So basically those people's lives were totally financially ruined because they were forced to pay back thousands or tens of thousands of euros all in one go and defraud and made to be fraudsters, and therefore totally losing all their professional and social connections and being financially destroyed. And all these people were innocent.
What is a fraud blacklist and how does it work? Is it something like public shaming? Because I do not know this in Germany.
So basically what it is that if you commit fraud, like for instance, defrauding benefits, that you can be put on a list, and then that list, it has implications for your ability to get further benefits. I think also for borrowing money possibly and for other things. So it's more like a computer system basically.
Is this public or is that...
I don't think it's public as such, but it's used in the government systems. So that's also another thing, is that many of the people didn't realize that they were on fraud blacklists at the time.
You do not need to be informed if your government puts you on a blacklist.
Apparently not.
Okay, you have no right to go against this in a court.
Well, so this is why they say it was a total failure, because basically, the tax authority kind of already assumed these people were guilty and made it very difficult for them to go to court. And on top of that, when other organizations started investigating the tax authority refused to cooperate. So, for instance, there's an agency called the Data Protection Agency, and they wanted to investigate what the tax authority was doing with its data. And basically, the tax authority kind of subverted their investigation. They sabotaged the investigation, because that's another aspect of it. It is true that indeed 26,000 people were falsely accused of benefits. But on top of that, when determining sort of which kind of people to investigate, the tax authority uses a number of risk categories, right? So a number of factors that determines whether they look more carefully at you, whether they scrutinize you. And one of the factors that they used was having a dual nationality, right? Mm. So basically what that means is that people who have a Dutch nationality, but also maybe Moroccan or American or Turkish or whatever, that they were scrutinized extra, basically. And of course, there are no, like, let's say, native white Dutch people who have a dual nationality. So it's a way to only look at people who are minorities, basically.
So what it has an aspect of ethnic profile.
Yeah, it's discrimination, yeah. Because basically out of the 26,000 people, 11,000 were ethnic minorities. So that's almost 40% of the total, which is obviously much larger than the population of ethnic minorities in the whole country. Hmm. And yeah, so basically part of how this basically unfolded is that I think back in, 2012, there was something called the Bulgarian fraud. And basically what happened is that there were some Bulgarians who had come to the Netherlands and they defrauded the childcare system. So they basically applied for childcare benefits and other kinds of benefits in the Netherlands. And then they moved back to Bulgaria and kept cashing in.
And that's illegal.
And of course,
That's illegal.
Yeah, that's very illegal.
Because in Germany, you can also have children in Germany and get childcare by living abroad.
Well, no, in the Netherlands, that's not allowed, especially like in this case, because these are people who it was basically a scheme. So basically, Bulgarian gangs would recruit people in Bulgaria to come to the Netherlands, register at an address, be there for like a few weeks, get the benefit, and then go back. So most of the money would go to the gangs, and then these people who were being paid to do this, they would also get a share. And so I've attached a video which you can show.
Wat blijkt? De meeste mensen in Ivanski hebben een Nederlandse bankrekening waar de Nederlandse Belastingdienst huur en andere toeslagen op stort. We willen weten wat er precies aan de hand is en vragen onze correspondent in Ivanski te gaan uitzoeken hoe die mensen aan een Nederlandse bankrekening komen.
So it's in Dutch. You have to.
I just wanted to. I just wanted to show the images. Like, okay. You don't need to understand it. But so basically, what you saw in that video is an investigative journalists who went to Bulgaria, and they found that there were in villages people with, you know, Dutch bank cards and Dutch tax documents, and they were basically bragging to their friends about how they were defrauding the Dutch government, waving around, you know, Dutch money. And of course, this came on TV, and this, you know, shocked and angered many Dutch people. And so that basically led to all the politicians.
Was it a big problem?
This is the thing, right?
A big scale money losing thing for the Netherlands?
Well, so this is exactly the thing. So what it led to is a massive kind of witch hunt by politicians to massively increase the level of scrutiny to fight fraud. But, and I have some of the numbers. So basically the Bulgarian fraud, if you look at the actual numbers, the Bulgarian fraud, they defrauded about 5.6 million euros. Then the other kinds of fraud that were there in that time, that was 16.8 million euros. Now that sounds like a lot, but if you look at all the benefits paid out between, I believe, 2012 and 2017, it was 68 billion euros. So this fraud that the political system was being very concerned about was only 0.02% of all benefits paid out.
That's a big problem.
Yeah.
Which other kinds of frauds did the Dutch have to shoulder at that time? Because in your video, you showed that this was not really proportional to other kinds of fraud.
Well, yeah, exactly. This is the thing. Actually, there's a graph, which I guess I don't have it with me right now, but I can send it later. But basically what that graph shows is that if you look at the money that's taken from benefit fraud, it's much smaller than the money that's taken from tax fraud, tax evasion, which is mostly done by rich people. Well, benefit fraud, of course, done by poor
people. I know that problem in Germany too.
But if you look at the amount of media attention, the overwhelming amount of media attention goes to benefit fraud and not to tax fraud and tax evasion. And so what you saw in this Bulgarian fraud is basically a massive amount of media attention and political attention went to fighting fraud. In fact, they invested 25 million euros in fighting fraud, which is more than the amount of fraud that was there. And so because they couldn't find enough real fraud, what they decided to do then is punish people for minor administrative mistakes. So, of course, how the system works in the Netherlands, for most of these things, you just apply online. It's actually very easy. And you have to put in your income data, your tax data, these kind of things, right? Very normal. And of course, a lot of these things are a bit complicated. So a lot of people sometimes make a small mistake. You know, a date is wrong or a number is slightly wrong. These are normal things in any country, right?
Yeah.
But so basically what happened is that people were now accused of fraud for making small administrative mistakes. So they were suddenly told, you know, after 2 years of receiving benefits, well, actually, you've been defrauding the government. And so you have to pay back 2 years worth of benefits plus fines plus interest. And of course, if you get that, you know, that totally destroys you. And so the thing is that most of these people didn't know that they were making these mistakes, and so they had really nowhere to turn to.
How did it happen that the government punished people for little mistakes on this scale? And who's responsible for it?
Well, it's a mix of things. So it's obviously the tax authority and all the bureaucrats involved. And the tax authority, there's even a lot of records that have come out now of correspondence within the tax authority of them, you know, celebrating being very harsh against fraudsters and really almost enjoying it. And then, of course, the political system. And so the thing is that most of this occurred actually during the previous cabinet. So not this cabinet, but the previous cabinet, which also involved Mark Rutte and his VVD party. But it also involved the Labour Party, which is kind of like the SPD, right? And so basically the ministers at that time were responsible, which included, amongst others, he's now the former leader of the Labour Party. He had to resign just a few weeks ago. And of course, Mark Rutte, because he was prime minister. And I think the final aspect of this thing that I'd like to touch on is something called the Rutte Doctrine, because this is basically something that has been part of this scandal, but actually part of a lot of scandals in the Netherlands. The Rutte Doctrine is something, it's a term that's actually not even created by Rutte's political opponents. It's created by his own assistants and people who work under him, because basically the Rutte Doctrine is this idea that civil servants should be able to express opinions freely and not have that be exposed to the public, right? Because technically civil servants are supposed to be neutral, right? But what it's really used for in practice is basically to hide government correspondence. So basically, in normal government affairs, you're supposed to write memos and document everything that's being said and done. But Rutte just made sure that everything was done verbally. So not writing anything down.
So sorry that I... So he eliminated the paper trail.
Yes,
that
basically.
Is the most important thing in... I'm working at a government institution that's taking in taxes for people. So I work with paper. Everything I do, I have to put down. But that does not mean I'm not allowed to say my opinion. And even then, it's not put down, but that has nothing to do with my work.
Yes, yes.
So no, how can he tell the government employees not to put down their work? That is not their opinion, that's their work.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, it's to hide. So basically what they do, for instance, we have like a freedom of information law. So you can request that certain documents have to be produced, but things that are sensitive to national security or things that are the opinion of civil servants, those can be hidden. So what they usually do is they take a document and they black out all the things that are national security or opinion of the civil servants. But in fact, there were even some documents where every single word was blacked out except for and basically. So it was a strategy of hiding what's really going on in government. And Mark Rutte was responsible for that, not just in this scandal, but across basically his entire cabinet for a bunch of other political issues as well.
So is this Rutte Doctrine still implemented, or did that go away as well with a scandal?
Well, I suppose that he would say that it's not being done anymore, but of course we don't know. Of course, now it's the end of his term, so we can't really see, but who knows in the next 4 years what will happen.
How was this injustice uncovered? I pretty much imagine the government was not so keen in making this transparent for the people.
So basically over the years, slowly these people who were the victims started to organize and started to complain. And it eventually came to the surface. And eventually, basically, a parliamentary investigation was done by two politicians, a guy called Pieter Omtzigt of the Christian Democrats and a lady called Renske Leijten of the Socialist Party. And they basically comprehensively documented and exposed everything that was done by the government in a report which came out basically in December of 2020. And since that report has come out, it's put political pressure on the government and on politicians to resign. And so basically what happened, the first person to resign was the leader of the Labour Party, who had been minister at that time, but that was again in the previous cabinet, not in this cabinet. So in this cabinet, he was in the opposition, actually, but he was leader of the Labour Party. So he resigned as candidate. And once that happened, it put pressure on the other people to resign. And so basically, the leader of the Green Left threatened to call for a motion of no confidence. And so to avoid that, Mark Rutte and his entire cabinet resigned as a cabinet, as well as certain key ministers resigned totally from politics. But Mark Rutte has not resigned from politics. He's only resigned as prime minister. He's still running as the candidate for the VVD party. And again, as I've pointed out, he will be reelected. So yes. He has taken political responsibility. Exactly. So he has taken political responsibility, but not really, because it doesn't have any real consequences, because he resigned, but he's still caretaker prime minister. So he's still doing everything that he normally does, and he will be reelected anyway. So where are the consequences?
So this scandal will not affect the elections in any meaningful way. What were the reactions to it?
Well, of course, you know, the people were shocked in a sense. And this scandal has been dragging out over, I think, the course of more than a year. So it's been on the news for since, I think, the end of 2019 already. But the problem is that there is one thing which is dominating everything and therefore making this play down, which is, of course, coronavirus. And that's I think, the main takeaway of this election and the main thread of this election, that basically Rutte is shielded from kind of responsibility or accountability to voters because people are mostly focused on coronavirus and see Rutte in a very positive light because of his handling of the coronavirus.
Do you think the consequences for Rutte would have been far more substantial if there hadn't been the coronavirus crisis?
Yes, definitely. The coronavirus has single-handedly helped him to rescue his political career. And I think...
Shame on you, coronavirus.
So there's something which I would like to show you. There's a graph. Let's see. And so you see that graph, right?
Yes. And the listeners do not see it, but the watchers will see it.
All right. So if you can just maybe for clarity, click on 2 years. You see in the top left corner, you see 1 year.
I've got it.
On 2 years.
Oh, what happened here?
Where?
Somewhere between the end, somewhere before April 2020. Something happened there because the blue party VVD is a party of Rutte.
Yeah.
And it has skyrocketed.
Yes, exactly. So here you can kind of see clearly in the polls that in February 2020, Rutte's VVD party was polling at 14%. It was still the largest party, but not by much. And if there was no coronavirus, this is kind of what the election would have looked like. It would have been maybe a narrow victory for VVD, maybe not. But what you see is that right starting in March 2020, Rutte's political party surges in the polls. It surges all the way to 26, 25%. And that's kind of where it is to this day. And so his political career has been single-handedly rescued by the coronavirus. Because basically in this election, people are looking, they want a strong leader, they want a crisis manager, they want someone who looks competent. And Rutte looks competent. He speaks calmly, he listens to the scientists, he goes on TV, does a press conference every week. He's not saying crazy things like Bolsonaro or Trump. And so for many people, that's kind of enough, that they see this man knows how to run things, we trust him to secure the future. But the problem with that way of thinking is that this election isn't about the coronavirus. The coronavirus will be over. Well, it won't be over, but
eventually
the crisis will
be
over in a few months, right? So in a few months, people will be vaccinated. And so the election really is about the recovery. It's about rebuilding the economy. It's about fixing all the problems that have been building up over the last few years. But unfortunately, people are blinded by that because of the coronavirus. And so people are not thinking about the next 4 years. They're thinking about the next 4 months.
Yeah. An election should always be about the future.
Yeah.
But in reality, in politics, it's always about the right now.
Exactly.
So in Germany, we have another problem because the government more and more looks really, really incompetent with everything concerning Corona. If it is help programs for the economy or social programs for people or the vaccination program or the testings, everything is going downhill. And the scandal we spoke about comes on top right now. So really the Union Party, the CDU, the Christian Democrats, they really looked really, really good because they had Angela Merkel and everything looked good until November last year. And from there, it goes downhill. So we have a little bit of a problem in believing our government is competent to do anything at all.
No.
But it's mind-boggling because it's not really affecting the polls in any...
That's the issue.
In any really meaningful way. But maybe we can talk about Germany at another time, because I would like to know, before we go into the parties and their leading candidates, how does the Netherlands politics work?
Yeah, all right. So basically, the Dutch political system, in some ways, it's similar to the German system, other ways, not. So obviously, we have a proportional system, right? So whatever percentage of the vote your party gets, that's the percentage of seats you get. The key difference is that we don't have a 5% threshold like in Germany. So that means that because we have 150 seats in parliament, to get one seat, you just need 0.75% of the vote. And what that... Sorry, yes?
And how does it work? Because I would like to know, if you wanted to run for parliament, how would you do it? Because there must be some barrier, so you do not end up with hundreds of thousands of parties or candidates.
Well, so this is basically how it works. So it works with party lists. So right, every party presents a list of people and you can vote for anyone on that list. Of course, like in most countries, most people don't know all the people. They just know the party leader, right? So most people tick the person on the top of the list. And then based on how many percentages, so let's say a party gets 10%, that's 15 seats. So the first 15 people on the list, that's how they get into parliament. However, what that also does is it creates a lot of party discipline, right? Because all those 15 people are depending on the leader to get into parliament. So there's another way, and that way is with preferential votes. So if you are, for instance, very popular in your region, right? And a lot of people in your region tick your name on the list. Yep. Even if you're close to the bottom of the list, if you get enough preferential votes, which I think it's about 18,000 votes, depending on the turnout, you can basically jump the list and still get into parliament. And so that has actually happened with some people. One politician, Peter Omtzigt of the Christian Democrats, I believe originally he was actually too low on the list. So normally he would not have gotten in, but because he was popular in his region, he got a lot of preferential votes and he basically jumped the list and still got in. And what that has enabled him to do is be much more critical of his own party, because even if
he's
want to take him
on
from
the
list,
party. He's
depending not
depending
on
the
his party.
People.
Exactly. But so what that also means is that, so basically what it means is that we have a lot of political parties. So currently in parliament, we have 13 political parties, 13 political parties.
How that does your country work? I can know, Germany had basically a meltdown when the AfD joined the party in the party in that way. People had a meltdown because another party was in the parliament, and every party that joins on top is looked at as a threat to the functioning of government and politics and democracy because of our historic experience with the Weimar Republic.
Yeah. Well, that's not really how it works in the Netherlands, because in the Netherlands, we've always had a lot of political parties. We do have more now than in the past, because in the past, you used to have, although there were more political parties, you would kind of have the Social Democrats on the left, the Liberals, so the VVD on the right, and the Christian Democrats in the center. And they would kind of switch between governing. But you also had some smaller parties. But right now, we have a lot more political parties. And those three traditional parties, the Labour Party, the VVD, and the Christian Democrats, they are much smaller than they used to be in the past, because we just have way more political parties now. And the number of political parties keeps increasing every year.
When will every Dutch citizen have its own party?
Well, maybe one day, yeah. No, because basically what happens is that because you only need 0.75% to get at least one seat, it means that we have a lot of splits in parties. So you have members of political party that will have a fight, because as I said, there's a lot of party discipline, right? So if you vote against your own party, it often means kind of that you have to leave your own party, right? And so when that happens, those people, if they can get enough publicity and are well known enough, if they take their seats with them and in the next election they manage to win enough votes to keep those seats, you have a new political party in parliament. Sorry. And so what you get is that actually there's several political parties right now in parliament that actually split off from existing political parties. So for instance, the PVV, which is actually right now the second biggest party, it's the party that's similar to AfD, it's anti-migration, anti-EU. Geert Wilders, the leader, actually used to be part of the VVD, but he left the VVD because there was a disagreement about Turkey joining the EU. And he formed his own party, and he got enough votes, and he stayed in, and now he's grown to be the second largest party. And the same applies.
Geert Wilders was part of the Rutte Party.
Yeah, originally, yes, he was. And the same applies to Denk. It was originally part of the Labour Party, but they basically formed their own party, which is more focused on Turkish and Moroccan interests. And so in that way, you can have splits from parties forming new parties, and you also have some totally new parties that have entered parliament. And it looks like in this election, we could have at least three more parties entering parliament.
And the party of Rutte, the VVD, they would still get 25%?
Yeah. So indeed, Rutte will get about 25%. But the problem is that every other party is getting far less votes. So if we go back to that graph from Politico, which shows the polls.
Yes, I still need to get used to the fact that everything that's above 1% can potentially get into the parliament, because I'm automatically ignoring them.
Yeah, no, indeed. So basically, if you look at that graph, you see that the VVD is ahead at 25%. But in second place, you kind of have a bunch of political parties. So you have 13%, 11, 10, 6, 7, 4. So you have a lot of parties kind of clumped together. So you have kind of one big party, the VVD, a bunch of middle parties, and then a bunch of small parties.
1%, 1%, 1%. Those would be sonstige, others in our elections, not even covered at all.
Now, that's the thing. In the Netherlands, some of these parties actually get, I would say, even disproportionate attention, especially if they're more controversial. So basically, our system, it's good and bad, because it's good in the sense that everybody is represented. and people have a wide range of political parties to choose from. So, for instance, we have a party called 50 Plus, which, as the name suggests, it's for old people. It's basically a pension interests party. It's a one-issue party. We have the party for the animals, for animal rights and environmentalism. And we have another party, the SGP, which is a party for like ultra-conservative Christians. And so these are parties that would not exist or would not be in parliament if we did not have, if we had a 5% threshold like you have in Germany. But it also means that those people would not be represented as well, because they would have to join another party that they disagree with, that they agree with a lot less. The disadvantage of it is that it makes things more difficult to govern, because you need more political parties to form a governing coalition. So currently we have four political parties in the governing coalition. So that's, as I said, the VVD of Mark Rutte, which is a liberal party. They support free markets and individualism and privatization. I guess maybe they're comparable to the FDP.
Hmm. He had welcoming words on the party conference of the FDP, the Liberal Party. So I was a little bit surprised, because I thought he would go to the CDU.
Oh, no.
There he is. There he is with the Liberal, with the Liberals.
Yeah, no, indeed. He's a Liberal. And then the other governing parties is the CDA, so the Christian Democratic Appeal. They are indeed like the CDU. They're a Christian Democratic Party. Then the other party is D66, which is a social liberal party. So basically, I would say they're the party that's most in favor of the European Union. They want more immigration. They want to fight climate change. They're very socially liberal when it comes to euthanasia, abortion, legalizing drugs. But I say economically, they're in the center. Mm-hmm. And then the final party in the coalition is the Christian Union. So obviously the Christian Democrats, they don't really talk much about God, right? They're more Christian.
Yes, I looked at the parties and I have two questions. What is a moderate Calvinist and what is an Orthodox Calvinist? And what of importance does that have in your political system?
I wouldn't say these are terms that are used daily, but basically the Christian Democrats, like, they're kind of like Merkel, right? So they're not like, it's not like in America where politicians are waving the Bible, you know? They're kind of just based on Christian values. They even have some Hindu and Muslim members. Like, they're a Christian Democratic Party. They're not explicitly Christian. Like, the kind of people who vote for them are people who, you know, go to church for Christmas. Right, but then the Christian Union,
even for the CDU, that's broadly array.
But then the Christian Union is much more explicitly Christian, although the difference is that they're much more left wing. So basically, when it comes to economics, climate change, and refugees, they're very left wing, because of course Christianity teaches you, you know, help the poor. Look after what God has given you, the environment.
Yes, yes.
Help the stranger. But they're also much more conservative on social issues. So abortion, they want to abolish all legalization of drugs and prostitution. They want more traditional marriage, these kind of things. And then the third Christian party, but they're not in the coalition, but just so we all understand it, it's called the SGP. They are really, really conservative right. So they're like in America, they're against gay marriage, against abortion. Until recently, they didn't allow women into their party.
What? And they are in parliament.
Well, they were forced by the courts, basically, to allow women, because that's discrimination.
Yes, but of course.
They are really conservative Christian. But so these other parties are not so much. But so basically, these are the four parties that are part of the governing coalition. And so, of course, the policies of the last 4 years are some kind of compromise between the political stances of these four parties.
The Labour Party, the PVDA, what happened to them over the years? Because it looks like they died.
Yeah, the Labour Party has totally been destroyed. And that's not an exaggeration, right? So the Labour Party, they were in the previous governing coalition, so between 2012 and 2017.
Where they helped to get those childcare benefits cut for people who really needed them.
Yes, indeed. They were partially responsible for that as well, indeed. And that's part of the reason why they haven't recovered either. But so basically what happened, the Labour Party between 2012 and 2017 was a coalition between the Labour Party and the VVD. And at that time, the Labour Party had, I think, about 25% of the vote. That's what they got in 2012. In 2017, they got 5% of the vote. So yes, they totally imploded.
Yes.
And the reason for that was...
How? Did they die?
The reason for that was...
Hidden in live TV?
In this cabinet, it was the time of the economic crisis. So there were many austerity measures taken, cutting back on the welfare state, cutting back on social services, defunding, which is kind of the opposite of what social democracy is supposed to be about. So all the people who voted for the Labour Party, they voted for them to stop these things from happening. But they ended up kind of implementing the policies of the VVD. And of course, any government is going to be a compromise, but I think in the eyes of most voters, the compromise was mostly going one way, right? And so people basically totally lost their faith in the Labour Party as a viable political party. And although the VVD also lost votes between 2012 and 2017, it was not nearly as much as compared to the Labour Party.
And where did the voters of the Labour Party go?
Well, they kind of went everywhere. So some went to the Green Left. Not really many went to the Socialist Party. The Socialist Party got the same amount of votes between those two elections. Some might have gone also to the populist right, possibly to PVV. But this is also the other shocking thing is that in previous elections, when the Labour Party would lose votes, they would all go to, for instance, the Socialist Party, which is like kind of like Die Linke. They're more radical left. So the votes would stay within the left-wing parties. But what you've seen in the Netherlands is that all the left-wing parties are losing votes. So in the past, if one left-wing party loses, another one gains. But in this election, all left-wing parties are losing. So that means the overall left is in decline. So what you see is that if you add up the Socialist Party, the Green Left, and the Labour Party put together, they're smaller than the VVD. Those three parties altogether are smaller than the VVD. And the VVD is not the only right-wing party, right? There's also Christian Democrats and PVV. So the overall left is declining, even though in this election, the average voter is more left-wing than before. They want more government intervention, more redistribution, more social welfare. So they're becoming more left-wing on economics, the voters, but they're not going to left-wing parties.
Why?
Well, yeah, basically it's a mix of reasons. So certainly in the case of the Labour Party, it's because no one trusts them anymore. They were starting to recover.
So does the Labour Party need to abolish itself and start anew under a new name? Because in Germany, the SPD, the Social Democrats, they have a new candidate, Olaf Scholz, who's pretty much the face of the politics that are pretty anti-social and which have cost the Social Democrats, the Labour Party in Germany, a lot of votes and a lot of trust. And they still pick that candidate and hope if they have a makeover. So they pretty up.
So the problem with the Dutch Labour Party is that although they were slowly starting to recover some of their votes around 2019, because of the coronavirus, obviously everyone went to Rutte again, and because the Labour leader was implicated in the child benefit scandal and he had to resign, that caused them to lose anything that they were gaining. So in this election, they will get their second worst result in history. The last election was their worst. This will be their second worst. And their new leader is, I guess she's definitely talking more left-wing if you look at the economic policies. But I guess, you know, she's only been there for a month. People don't really know her and she's not necessarily that charismatic. And so, you know, most people are not that convinced. As for the overall left-wing losing, I would say part of the reason for that is that although most Dutch people are becoming more economically left-wing, they are not becoming culturally left-wing. They're actually becoming culturally more right-wing. So people are becoming more skeptical about immigration and critical about integration and all these things, whereas the left is very much profiling itself as very socially progressive and wanting to take in more immigrants and refugees and these kind of things. And so the thing is that there's a relatively large section of the Dutch electorate that is left and conservative. So they want more redistribution, but they also want less immigration. And there isn't really a political party to serve those people. The Socialist Party sometimes is a bit more conservative, like they're very critical of the European Union. The PVV of Geert Wilders is obviously very anti-immigrant, and sometimes they move a bit to the left on healthcare and pensions, but there isn't really a left conservative party. So even though there's a shift to the left, the left-wing parties are not benefiting from it because they are left and progressive, and there isn't really any left conservative party. And the other thing is that the parties on the right are smartly moving to the left economically. So the VVD in their political program is becoming more left-wing, actually. Well, it's a bit exaggerated, but for instance, Mark Rutte is now calling to raise the minimum wage, which is shocking. It's totally shocking for the Liberal Party to support raising the minimum wage.
How do they do that in the party? Are they going with him and say, yeah, let's do it?
Well, I mean, it's in the program, so that means they agreed, right?
Because they think it will save their standing in the government?
Well, I think so. I think he realizes that in this current economic environment, people want more government support because it's a crisis. So you can't say, oh, people should just work hard and do it for themselves, because it's clear that that's not going to solve the problem. And the crisis is caused by something external, which is a pandemic. It's not caused by, you know, people being lazy or things like that, right? So basically, they realize that in this climate, it's necessary to support stronger government action. So the VVD program explicitly calls for a strong government, whereas in the past, they said we need less government. They said we need to privatize parts of the healthcare system. Now they're saying, actually, the privatization went too far. Now which was their own policy, but now they're saying it went too far. So I think that's another reason that people are not shifting to left-wing parties, because to some extent, the right-wing parties are beginning to cater more to this shift in the electorate.
We have a problem with that as well in Germany. So basically, the AfD in East Germany is more like national socialist. They want to implement socialist policies, left-wing policies, but only for Germans. So what the Dutch are looking for is something like national socialist Dutch workers.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I would use the word national socialist because that sounds like Nazis.
Yes, because I said.
But not really like national socialist, but just, I would just say like conservative left is probably more accurate. But that's like a certain portion. I think some people
would love those. Yeah. Policies without the murdering of people.
Yeah, exactly. So that's basically one thing is that basically across the board, you're seeing people are kind of rejecting what was in the past very dominant, this idea of neoliberalism, of basically that the free market can always do it better, that we should begin to privatize some sections of the welfare state, like the healthcare system. All of those ideas are beginning to be thrown out the door, even by the parties that supported them in the past.
So and the end of neoliberalism in the...
Maybe not the end, but the beginning of the end. Yeah, the beginning of the end. And for instance, a good example of the failure of these policies, because I think part of what is exposed to the failure is the COVID-19 pandemic. Because basically in the previous cabinet, Mark Rutte's government had slashed the number of ICU beds. They had decreased the number of overall hospital beds, I believe, from 44,000 hospital beds to 33,000. And so what that has led to during the pandemic, of course, is that there's not enough ICU beds, which means that we have to go in lockdown, which is bad for the economy and bad for people's mental health. And, you know, is not good. Mm. And we literally had to airlift some people at the beginning of the pandemic to Germany to be in German ICU beds because we had slashed our own ICU beds to save money, basically.
Yes. Good that you did it during the first wave. I think during our second wave, that wouldn't have been possible because in Germany too, we slashed the ICU beds more than was good for our healthcare system, especially a system that will get a lot more older people who need to be cared for in the future. And this coronavirus kills old people, especially truly. So, yes. But which candidate of which party is the most dangerous for Rutte, maybe in the future?
Right now no one is dangerous because he's well ahead of the competition. The second place is Geert Wilders, right? And that was actually...
What did he act like during the corona crisis? Because in Germany, mm-hmm. the AfD really went crazy. They were more like COVID deniers and conspiracy theorists.
So Geert Wilders is a lot smarter than that, because basically we can make two comparisons, because we have actually not one but two populist anti-immigration parties in the Netherlands. So I have to give a bit of quick background to this. So obviously we have Wilders, who is the original, he's been in parliament for much longer, but as part of the PVV, he's been in parliament since 2006, I believe. And he has been a major force in politics. In the last 2 years, because he's rather extreme, for instance, he supports banning the Quran, he wants to shut down the mosques, he wants to establish a ministry of remigration and de-Islamization, and he wants to take away the right to vote for people with dual nationality, which would include all people of Moroccan descent, because Moroccans cannot get rid of their Moroccan passports. So very discriminatory and unconstitutional policies. And so because of these policies, although many more people want to reduce immigration than those who vote for PVV, PVV is too extreme for some people, which also means that no political party wants to work with him. Mark Rutte has already said explicitly he will not work with VVD, no matter the with PVV, no matter the election result.
VVD, I will not work with anybody.
Yeah. So basically, what that led to is that there's a lot of people who maybe would vote for a party that's against immigration and critical of the EU, but isn't so racist. If we want to put it bluntly,
we would like to have our racist party a little bit less. Obviously racist.
Yeah. And so the answer for those kind of people came in 2017 with the Forum for Democratie, led by a man called Thierry Baudet. And basically, this party pitched itself exactly as this kind of party that would be critical of immigration and the EU and also climate change. So as in denying climate change, but sounding in a reasonable way, not using, you know, street language and not calling, you know, for the deportation of certain groups of people and things like that. And so although they entered in 2017 with only two seats, in the next few years, they started to massively, massively grow in the polls.
What do you mean massively in Dutch? In the Netherlands, well, that could mean a lot.
We can take a look again at the graph. If you look at that graph from Politico, go to around, I think, January. If you go to, April 2019, you see that for a short moment of time, the VVD is not the biggest party. Do you see that?
Yes.
And you see it, there's a party called FVD, which is the biggest.
Yes, and that's a party that split from Geert Wilders.
Well, no, they didn't split from Geert Wilders. They were a totally new party.
Oh.
And that's the Forum for Democracy. And so basically around 2019, they became really big.
Wow.
And they're really popular. Of course, again, in the polls, they still had only two seats in the actual parliament.
So was there thumb? My tongue is killing me today. Was there something that happened?
Yeah, so basically what happened is that they pitched themselves as a better alternative to PVV. And so a lot of voters left PVV. And also some voters from the VVD who were too scared to vote for PVV, they said, okay, this is a party we can vote for.
Yes.
At the same time, that was the time that a new climate change law had been implemented, which a lot of So the thing with climate change in the Netherlands is that most people in the Netherlands believe in climate change and they want to fight climate change, but they don't want to pay for it. And for instance, many people want to build windmills, but not in their own backyard.
Yes, so you see, I know Germany.
Yeah, yeah. So wherever windmills pop up, people are complaining.
Yes.
And so in 2019 was what we call the provincial elections. So in the provincial elections, you vote not only for the provincial government, but those provincial governments choose the Senate, which is the upper chamber of parliament, right? And so basically in those provincial elections, the FVD was the biggest party in the country. And they were really popular. And if they had continued on that streak, Thierry Baudet could have been actually even the prime minister right now. Well, not right now, but in next week. Except he kind of shot himself in the foot because basically after that election and that huge victory, they started with massive infighting in the party. There was a scandal to do with finances and the party started to decline. But even in February, so they went from about 18%, which was their high point, to about in February 2020, they were still at about 10%, which again, considering that they only have two seats, would still be a massive victory if they got that. But basically, once coronavirus started, they embraced coronavirus conspiracy theories.
Yes.
So, for instance, Thierry Baudet, he insists that there is no excess deaths because of coronavirus.
So he is a coronavirus denier, not climate change denier?
He doesn't deny that there's coronavirus. He just says it's not deadly enough and there's no excess deaths, so open everything up. That's basically his position.
It went downhill from there for the party.
So it started to go downhill. And then I think it was in November of 2020, it was exposed that in the youth division of the party, there were internal WhatsApp groups where they were basically saying racist, anti-Semitic and conspiratorial things. So, for instance, there was a guy who said, I will choose any party that can make the Netherlands 95% white. They were saying things about Jews, all these kind of crazy things. And basically it led to everyone important in the party leaving and the party imploding.
So the nice, not so racist party is racist.
Yes. And so, while FVD was imploding, and this is actually the genius of Geert Wilders, because part of the reason all this happened is because FVD is, it is in a sense a democratic party because it has a lot of members and all of this. The PVV doesn't have those problems. The PVV has only one member, Geert Wilders. He's the only member of the party. Everyone else is not a member.
But there are still other people who are in the parliament for the PVV.
Well, yeah, they're on the list, of course, but they're not members of any kind of organization. That means he has total control over the parties, which is kind of dictatorial, because he's the only one who's doing this.
How is that allowed? Because in Germany, you do have to have at least 7 party members to be a party at all.
Because I think in the Netherlands you need a certain amount of signatures, right? So as long as you can get the signatures of people who are interested.
We have something like this too, so that a citizen can run for office. You can run for the parliament as well, but he cannot have a party of his own.
No. So the thing with Wilders is, well, actually, technically, I think it is 2 members, himself and then something, I think it's called the Geert Wilders Foundation, so an organization. Basically, so by the way, what it means is that he has total control of the party, which also means he can keep out all the crazy people, which Baudet couldn't do. There are lots of crazy people in his party, which destroyed his party. Geert Wilders, everyone has to toe his line. And so Geert Wilders has been much smarter. He has not embraced coronavirus conspiracy, but he has been very critical of the government's coronavirus in ways which I would actually, even though I disagree with his party, I would say most of his criticisms have been valid. So, for instance, he's pointed out, as I said earlier, that the government massively cut the number of ICU beds, which has made the crisis worse. That's true. It doesn't matter if Geert Wilders is saying it. And the other aspect where he's criticized a lot is the curfew, the coronavirus curfew, which was implemented, I believe, in February. And so that basically created a lot of controversy. So I have prepared a video because the day...
What I saw about the curfew were the riots. The bad...
So they were massive riots.
Riots and hooligans.
Yeah. So if you can just show that video.
I think it's not about what she says, but what the pictures
what
show. Because
yeah,
it's
yeah,
in
exactly.
Dutch.
Yeah, no. It's what you see: explosions, rioting. So basically.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, it's not so different from especially bad football games in some cities in Germany, or maybe the 1st of May at any given day. So it's not that bad.
Well, yeah. So basically what happened is that around February, the government announced that because of the British variant of the coronavirus, which is obviously much more contagious, that there was no extra measures which they could take except for one measure, which we had not implemented until that point, which was a national curfew. Which
Why
it would be the first national curfew since the Second World War when Germany was occupying the Netherlands.
Why didn't they implement a curfew? Because I got a curfew pretty soon on my city level, because here everyone can say our citizens, the citizens do not get out because it's dangerous.
Yeah, no, so in the Netherlands, a curfew is not... It's very... The Netherlands are a freedom-loving people. The government telling people when they can and cannot leave their houses is not really something that's accepted. And it's seen, again, as something very authoritarian. Again, the last people to implement a curfew were the Nazis. So it's not really something that's very popular. And the other reason is it's not, at least initially, it wasn't that clear that it would work, because the logic was sort of, okay, so the curfew would be from 9 o'clock in the evening till 4:30 in the morning. But how would that stop anything? Because some people say it will stop illegal parties, but illegal parties are already illegal. So how would a curfew change that? And the other thing is that if people are no longer allowed to visit each other in the evening, they would just do it earlier in the day. So it wasn't clear that it would work. And of course, it's a very kind of authoritarian measure. And so it was quite controversial, but it made it through parliament. And basically the day it was implemented, there were a few coronavirus conspiracy theorists who were protesting against it, but those people were actually mostly peaceful. But what happened is that angry youths exploited the anti-curfew protests in order to basically just riot and loot shops. So basically, most of the people who participated in the riots were not really concerned about the ethical or legal aspects or whatever. They were just looting, basically. So a lot of shops were looted, as you saw, explosions. It was basically just a bunch of people who have been in lockdown for months, kind of just wanting to let go, in a way. That's basically it. Like it's not much more complicated than that. It was just people letting it all go. Yeah, and it was basically widely condemned from left to right. There is almost no political party which was in favor of the riots. However, of course, the PVV, although it's not necessarily the only party, but the PVV has been most strongly arguing against the curfew. Although, of course, they condemned the riots as well. They were against the curfew, and they're criticizing the curfew and the overall coronavirus response, which has basically put Wilders in a very good position, because he's mostly criticizing the government from a reasonable perspective, whereas Baudet has kind of, he destroyed his entire appeal. He now has, he still has supporters, but it's a very loyal, very aggressive, but very small section of the electorate. So if you look online, like, his supporters are everywhere. Like, he has a lot of support. He has lots of followers on Twitter. His YouTube videos get a lot of views, but it's a relatively small section of the electorate. So he currently has 2 seats, and the polls show he could get 4. Whereas in the beginning of 2020, it would have been 15, and in 2019, it could have been 26. And so he kind of shot himself in the foot, basically.
Yeah. The good thing about the AfD is they do not disappoint in being stupid. Because if they had acted like Geert Wilders is acting in the Netherlands, they would have wiped the floor with every other party, I'm pretty sure. So if they hadn't been so coronavirus conspiracy or so stupid in general, they wouldn't have been able to go down the hill as well. So no. I'm pretty hopeful they stay stupid and do not learn from Geert Wilders.
No, Geert Wilders has been handling himself very well. So depending on the polls, he currently is sitting on 20 seats, which I think is about, 12, 13% of the vote. So, and he will probably get a few more seats. He could get anything between 20 and 25 seats in this election, which will again put him again as the second largest party in the country. But again, it sort of depends how you want to look at it, right? He's the second largest party, but with, 13, 14%. So it depends how you want to look at it. You can see it as the second largest party or as 85% of Dutch people being against it,
And as you have so many parties in the parliament, that's not the biggest problem.
Yeah, exactly. This is kind of the thing about the coalition system, is that there are no parties who want to work with him anymore. Well, except for, of course, Forum for Democracy. But all the other mainstream parties have refused to work with him because his party has been is too extreme. It is just too extreme, and his policies would go against the Constitution. Like, the only way they could be implemented is if he would win, if his party would win a two-third majority, which is impossible. Even 51% is impossible, but a two-third majority is totally impossible.
So, as we learn from German history, it's not always repeating itself. So you can have a country without a threshold where the second largest party does not take over government.
Well, yeah, no, because that's the other thing. The more interesting thing actually about the election is not the results, because we kind of already know the results almost. I mean, I don't want to shoot myself in the foot or something, but it's kind of clear what's going to happen, right? But the more interesting thing is which coalition will be formed after the election.
Before we come to the coalition, just shortly, what are the problems of the Netherlands in the next 4 or more years? Because as you told at the beginning of our conversation, people are voting for Rutte right now because of coronavirus, and they trust or believe in him to be a good leader. But that does not concern the problems your country and the society have. So tell me, what's the mood of the people and what are the real problems?
Now, so there are several problems. Obviously, relating to the child benefit scandal, it's fixing the benefits system and the system of accountability. So, I think I didn't mention, by the way, for the viewers, the people have now been given compensation. So after much scrutiny and pressure, finally, the victims are now, they will get 30,000 euros in compensation each, plus more for those who need even more than that.
Some people have lost their homes and lives have been destroyed. People got divorced. Someone killed himself. I think 30,000 is not really enough.
But yeah, at least it's something. But to prevent this from happening again, there are different proposals. So some want to, because basically there are all sorts of benefits for different things. There's like rental allowance for helping with rent. There's one for helping to pay for health insurance. There's the child one. There's all sorts of different ones. Mm-hmm. So some people, for instance, want to simplify it by just having one payment that depends on your income, kind of like they call it a negative tax. So it's like, right, you have a progressive tax system, right? So the more you earn, the more tax you pay. So this would kind of take it also in the opposite direction, that the less you earn, you actually get money back from the government. And then that would replace this complicated system of benefits, that you just have one thing, which would simplify the bureaucracy. So those are some of the proposals. So fixing that whole system and improving government accountability, that's one thing. The other things are mostly the economic things and climate change things. So the Netherlands is facing a massive housing crisis. People cannot find homes, especially people of lower income, especially students like me. It's really impossible to find a home. There's not enough homes being built. So basically finding a way to fix the housing crisis, that's one of the biggest issues. One of the other crises is climate change, of course. In 2019, they implemented the climate change law, which included 600 proposals to fight climate change and to get us in line with the Paris Agreement. But of course, no, it's not enough. And so basically, a lot of parties are profiling themselves as fighting climate change and finding ways to do that. And of course, it's also a tough issue because, you know, as I said before, everyone wants to fight climate change. No one wants to pay for it. So finding a way to, for instance, with windmills, you know, many people hate windmills, but they found that in cases where they allowed the local community to benefit from windmills, so basically they get paid to have the windmill, then suddenly they like it. So again,
I'm not surprised, but we have the same problems in Germany. It's the same problems. Everyone wants to fix the climate change problems, but no one wants to build windmills or solar systems, anything.
Yeah.
it's even getting so far that whole communities are really worked up about it, because someone is giving his land to those firms that are building the windmills, and they get money, but the rest of the people do not get money. So it's pretty angry for someone.
Now, so climate change is also kind of controversial, because basically some policies will directly hurt certain groups of people. So this was actually a big issue in 2019. We had actually the farmers' protests. So the farmers came with thousands of tractors in Den Haag protesting. And the reason for that was something called the stickstoff crisis. So with nitrogen, basically, I think there was too much nitrogen in the air. I'm not sure exactly which gas. And that is related to both the agricultural industry and the construction industry. And because a court ruled that the government was not doing enough, they had to temporarily suspend all construction, and they had to find ways to reduce the output of industrial agriculture, especially cattle production, because that produces a lot of gases, which of course made the farmers angry. And there was a whole issue, because basically there's certain political parties like the Christian Democrats who are supported by a lot of farmers. There's other parties like the Green Left and D66 who want to fight climate change and reduce the number of cattle in the Netherlands. But of course, that's bad for the farmers, so there's political conflict. And so those conflicts.
Don't worry, you can always export the cattle to Germany. I know of some pig farms that are, those farms are Dutch owned. So you can do that with cattle too.
Well, I mean, that wouldn't help climate change, right? That would just
No, not really.
It is true. That's what some countries are doing. I think, was it Sweden or something, like shut down a lot of the coal plants or other things?
Yeah, and they came to my country as well. Yeah, in Brandenburg, we had Swedish firms getting coal out of our country, and that's not helping climate change at all.
Yeah, exactly.
But you said the government had to stop constructions. Did that worsen the housing crisis?
Yeah, that's exactly. That's the problem, is that there is a direct conflict between building houses and industrial agriculture. Like, the two cannot go at the same time. So if we have to build more houses, it means we have to decrease agriculture, which is bad for farmers. But it's bad for, e.g., people like me, that there's not enough housing. And so there's a direct political conflict. Mm-hmm. It's also, you see differences between urban and rural areas. Parties like the Green Left and D66 are supported by people in urban areas, in cities, by young people, by students. Parties like the Christian Democrats are supported in the rural areas. And so basically you have people in cities saying, hey, we want more houses. And people in the rural area saying, hey, we want our farms. So it's a classic conflict.
Something has to give.
Exactly. Because basically, I think what they ended up doing is that they had a compromise. So basically that they would buy up some of the farms. So the government would pay the farmers to stop, basically.
That's a good idea. Money on
yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway, so climate change is
maybe
one of the
issues. Maybe the government can build houses on those farms.
Partially. That'll be part of it. But it's especially with the whole gas output thing. And then I think the other thing is basically the economy, right? It's a massive crisis. So the government, I would say in that sense, the response has been fairly good. So the government is paying for companies that have suffered for coronavirus. They're paying 90% of the wages. They're paying the fixed costs of companies that have had to close, like the restaurant industry. The restaurant industry is actually very angry because the curfew and all these other measures are killing them, basically. Sorry, the curfew, yeah. The curfew and all these, and the lockdown measures are killing the restaurant industry. And actually, a couple of days ago, there was an illegal, I want to say strike, but it's the opposite of a strike. They illegally opened up a lot of restaurants across the country.
They strike by working.
They reverse striked. Yeah, they strike by working. And yeah, as a form of protest.
How did that play out? And how big was it?
So basically what they did is that because coronavirus doesn't spread that much outside, the restaurants are saying we should open up it's called terras, which is like the outside section of a restaurant. You know, where you can sit outside.
Yes, we have that.
And then Exactly, with social distancing and hand washing and all of that. They're saying we can do it safely. So they basically illegally opened up the outside part of the restaurant and accepted people to come and drink coffee and everything. And basically, although the police eventually shut them down, they didn't give them the 4,000 euro fine, which they were supposed to give. Because, well, I mean, yeah.
I wouldn't.
They don't want to give everyone like 4,000 euro fines.
As well.
Sorry?
I wouldn't be want to be the policeman who does
that. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, that's the thing. Many of the police, some of the police spokespeople have come out and saying that they, when the curfew was originally going to be implemented, they said, we don't know about implementing this because it means we have to devote our resources to fighting this problem where we can't fight real crimes and things like that. So it, also some of the police are a bit frustrated by the measures. So basically, yeah, the economic recovery is going to be one of the main things. What do we do? What do we invest in? A lot of parties are talking, because, for instance, under the Rutte administration previously, they abolished the system of free university education. So basically, in the past, if you studied, you would get like a stipend, a certain amount of money every month, depending on your income. And you can use that, obviously, to pay your rent and to pay school fees. That system was changed to a student loan system like you have in America, although nothing as bad as in America because our school fees are not insanely high and there were zero interest rates on these loans. But basically, this has put many students into a massive amounts of debt, caused more financial stress, et cetera, et cetera. And basically, almost every political party except for VVD is now in favor of abolishing that and going back to the old system in some form.
In the old system, you didn't have to pay the money back to the government because we have something called BAföG, but that is essentially a loan as well.
No, so in our case, it was it's not a loan. It was not a loan, well, up to a certain point. So I think depending a bit on your income and whether you were living at home or outside with your parents or outside of your home, you would get at maybe something like 600 euro or whatever. And then anything beyond that, you could borrow then. You know, if you want to go on fancy holidays to Ibiza.
But those 600 euros you didn't have to pay back.
No. But now you do. So now you still get the same, but it's all, everything is, it's all, almost all of it is a loan, basically.
That's not good.
And but what that means, especially, you know, if you're low income and especially if you live outside of your parents' house, that means all the rent, all your food costs and your university tuition, and basically the cost of living for 4 to 6 years or more, depending on how long you study,
everything
has to be paid back.
Everything.
Now, of course, all students work on the side, but of course, that's not enough to live. And most students do that so just so they can get extra money to, I don't know, buy beer or something, right? So the basic costs of living are covered, but you have to pay it back. And so that puts people into tens of thousands of euros of debt.
Yes.
I think on average, it's 20,000 euro or something like that. So
that's a lot. That's a lot to start your life after you have studied.
So this is something that's very concerning to a lot of students, young people like me. And other issues is just overall the economy. Every sector wants more investment, more money. The healthcare workers wanted a raise. VVD and other parties in the coalition blocked that raise. They voted against it. For a permanent raise, that is. So they had a temporary bonus, I think 1,000 euros for every healthcare worker. But they blocked a permanent raise for healthcare workers. So these kind of policies are of concern, and a lot of the parties that are now trying to campaign are trying to profile themselves on these kind of policies. And so that will basically affect how the coalition negotiations will go.
Tell me again why Rutte is elected as number one, because everything you told me right now tells me he may be more into the state and a little less austerity, but still not really good.
Well, yeah. I guess this is the thing, like, they call him, like, kind of like, you know, they used to call Donald Trump, like, Teflon Don. Like, nothing
can
affect him.
Yeah, I know Teflon Merkel.
So, basically, it is also kind of Teflon, that there's been actually several political scandals, like, in the last few years, and he's kind of just survived all of them. Like, there's actually been quite a lot of ministers that have resigned And they have been destroyed, but he has not been destroyed by it, basically. Like, they take the fall for him. And I guess the other aspect is that he's kind of likable. He goes to work on a bike, so I guess that makes him seem like he's
Yeah,
part
I
of the
just wanted
people.
to say in Germany, everyone would fawn over him, even the Greens, because he's riding a bike.
Yeah. But I mean, that's just very normal in the Netherlands, you know. Our politicians are more, they're not that special, right? He doesn't even have security. He just lives in his apartment, you know. And then the other aspect is that he's kind of a political comedian, so he knows how to move with the political winds. And this is exactly what we're seeing now with the economy. He sees people want a more a government interventionist policy, so he's kind of moving in that direction.
But not a
And
lot, not
of
enough.
course, he's still a right-wing party, right? So they can't do it totally, but the point is that he finds a way to secure as broad an electorate as possible. That's why his party's so big, because by not being like too specific or too hard or too ideological, they're able to appeal to more people outside of their traditional base. Because I think the real traditional base, the real like liberal people are maybe 10%. But his party's at 25% because he's able to appeal to people who are not necessarily that strongly agreeing with him, but you know, he's able to appeal to them also because you know he pitches his party as we're the entrepreneurs' party. And if you want to start a business, we're there for you. He also says they're the party of the car, so they were very much in favor of increasing the speed limit to 130, like you have in Germany, which
Yeah,
they did.
we do not have a speed limit.
Oh, well, even better. So.
You know, in Germany, we want to have the speed limit everywhere, 130 kilometers per hour. That would be a great, great. The Greens are fighting for it since forever. So increasing the speed limit in the Netherlands, that's something we want to get to.
Oh wow. And that's actually the funny thing is that he actually had to go back on that promise because of this whole stickstoff crisis. They had to take several measures to stop it. So obviously they shut down the construction, but they also had to reduce the speed limit again from because with more speed limit, there's more emissions. And so, yeah, basically. But
That's
so
what the
for
Greens are
people who
saying in
feel
Germany too.
like for people who feel like they also they're against higher taxes, right? So for people who want to pay less taxes, who want to drive a fast car, want to start their own business, like it's kind of an appealing party in many ways. And then the same applies with immigration. Again, they are obviously they're not like Wilders, but obviously they want a more restrictive immigration policy. And of course, many people want less immigration, so that's also another appealing aspect of it. So there's
So
many ways.
he is the VVD is something like the People's Party, Volkspartei would be the word. In Germany, we have basically two great Volkspartei, People's Parties, the
Yeah.
CDU and the SPD. And the SPD is dying. But so the Netherlands only have the VVD.
Well, I mean, that's literally what it's called. VVD means Volkspartei for Freiheit and Demokratie. So it even says in their name that they're a people's
But
party. But yeah.
in the Netherlands, Volkspartei does not necessarily mean a big Volkspartei.
Well, we used to have, we used to, it used to, they used to have three. It used to be VVD, Christian Democrat CDA, and Labour Party, PvdA. Those used to be the Volkspartei, but both the CDA and the Labour Party have kind of collapsed in the last few years from their former glory. Because again, those parties used to win 40 seats, 45 seats. But now CDA is at 20 seats. Labour Party might win 12 seats in this election.
Well,
So,
and what happens after the elections? You told me coalition building can be tricky. The last time it needed 225 days. That was the longest since World War II. How did the country survive without a government?
this may seem very strange to Germans who are scared. I think when the coalition formation takes anything more than what, a few days, a few weeks?
Yes, we went insane when it lasted more than 3 months.
But in the Netherlands, it's people are a lot less scared. I mean, the last formation, as you said, took 225 days, which was the longest in history. And I don't know how long this one will take, to be honest. But that's, again, a product of the system. Because we have so many political parties, there are many more interests to be taken. Because, again, in the past, the coalitions used to be of two parties, maybe three. But now the coalition is of four parties. And if it wasn't for coronavirus and the VVD going into the sky, there probably would have had to be at least five parties in the coalition, because the landscape would have been so splintered. Now, because the VVD is big again, that won't be necessary. They need only four parties again. So basically, there's several possibilities. There's a possibility that the current coalition just goes on. So because based on the polls, there's a high possibility that these same four parties will win enough votes together to form a majority. So that's very possible. So again, it'll be VVD, Christian Democrats, Christian Union, and D66. The other possibility, and this is becoming increasingly likely, because more and more political parties, even parties that before would have rejected it, are considering becoming part of the coalition and working with the VVD. So for instance, the Socialist Party, right? So most political parties say they refuse to work with PVV, right? Because they're too extreme. The Socialist Party says they refuse to work with the VVD because, I mean, they're the opposite. Like, the VVD is liberal. They want free market privatization. Socialist Party wants the opposite, right? So, but this time the Socialist Party
said... That would never happen in Germany. Yeah, the coalition since, like, the birth of my brother 17 years ago, the coalition was CDU, CSU, and SPD. So the Labour Party in Germany is working together with the Conservatives.
Well, I mean, the Socialist Party is not the Labour Party. The Socialist Party is like Die Linke. They're more radical. So the Socialist Party is now saying they want to be part of the coalition. Like, they will consider it. Of course, I mean, it doesn't mean they will be, and they have to negotiate.
No. Labour and Socialist is Sozialdemokraten, Social Democrats. It's the same party for me.
Oh, no. But in that, it's different because the Social Democrats is Labour. So they are centre-left. And the Socialist Party is radical left.
Oh, okay.
So it's like Die Linke. You know Die Linke, right?
Sorry.
So that's what I'm saying. So even the radical left is saying, maybe we will work with VVD. Also the Party for the Animals, which they want to cut the number of cattle in half, which is kind of a bit extreme, especially for the Christian Democrats. They are ready to govern. So basically, and the Labour Party says they will govern, but only if they come with at least one other left-wing party. I think because they realize their mistake from the past, that they will be destroyed otherwise. So there's a high possibility that you would have a coalition of, obviously it will be VVD and CDA, but it will possibly will include the Labour Party and the Green Left. Or maybe even the Labour Party and the Socialist Party, or D66 and Green Left, or D66 and the Labour Party. So basically, in whichever way it goes, there will probably be VVD and CDA and two left parties in the coalition is the most likely outcome. The outcome which will not happen is PVV being in the coalition, even though they will be the second largest party. Their policies are too extreme. There was actually, I think 2 days ago, a one-on-one debate between Wilders and Rutte. And Rutte kept hammering the point, you want to take away the right to vote for people with dual nationality. You want to do de-Islamization. You want to do, and I will not work with you. He kept saying it. So it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, he would destroy his party if he did it.
Yeah, and that's also the thing. The other main reason, which I actually forgot to mention, and this is also the reason that Rutte keeps hammering, is that they did work with the PVV in the past. So in 2010, what happened was that that was when Rutte first came to power. So in his first term, he formed basically, this was a very strange construction. So a minority coalition with VVD and CDA, but with parliamentary support from PVV. So PVV would not technically be in the coalition and they wouldn't have any ministers, but basically they would vote for the budget and other things in exchange for getting some policies against immigration and stuff like that.
Was that some kind of minority government?
Yeah, it was a minority government, and then with support from the PVV. I don't know exactly how you could say it's not a, it's a coalition without being a coalition, you could say, basically.
Yes.
But basically, what happened was it was the
time of the economic... We would not do that in Germany.
Well,
it's not going well if we do it.
They learned from their mistake, because basically what happened is that when they did that, the PVV started being extremely loud, which was very funny, because the Christian Democrats would then have to and would have to go on TV and say, no, we don't agree with that part. We don't agree with that part of what he's saying. And he would say a lot of extreme things. And then at the same time, it was the time of the economic crisis. So they were voting for austerity measures. And basically what happened is that in the negotiations, there was a measure which would cut the pensions. And Wilders said, no, I will not vote for that. And that led the coalition to collapse in 2012. So the first coalition of Rutte was only for 2 years. That's why he's been in power for 10 years and three terms. So it was 2 years, 4 years, and 4 years. And since that time, because Wilders pulled the plug, the VVD and both the CDA since that time have refused to work with Wilders. So at that time, they were actually willing to do it. But since then, they said, we've learned from that time, we will never do it again.
Yes.
And Rutte actually said, I will accept you again if you apologize both for that time and also for his statement about Moroccans. He said, there should be less Moroccans and we will arrange for that. And obviously, Wilders refused to apologize for that. So then it, of course, didn't happen. So yeah,
that sounds dangerous, to be honest.
Oh, yeah, it is.
We will get rid of those Moroccans.
Basically.
Okay. So maybe we can talk again after a year when your coalition stands.
When it's finally there.
I'm pretty sure the Netherlands will not go up in flames and Germany would just cease to exist.
No. I mean, our media
circle cannot think without a functioning government after 3 months of coalition building process. So I have still two questions from my listeners for you.
All right.
Gaza Freitag fragt, how seriously is sea level rise being taken? And to complete that question, Prima Lima wants to know, perhaps not entirely up to date, but as a coastal inhabitant, I am interested in whether every government in the Netherlands gives priority to coastal protection across party lines. Is there any substantial planning?
Yeah.
So is your country going to go under when the climate change happens? And will you come to Germany?
So basically, no, because the Dutch people have been fighting water for over 1,000 years, and mostly we've been winning, except for the Great Flood of 1953. But sometimes water wins too. The Netherlands is a country. In most countries, the land came first and then the people. In the Netherlands, the people came first and then the land. We built the country. We have an entire province called Flevoland, which did not exist 60 years ago. It was totally underwater. It was seabed. We created it just out of the seabed. It's now land. The Netherlands, we have massive dikes which were built, and they keep getting expanded and renewed. And the sad thing about with climate change is that while countries like Bangladesh will flood, the Netherlands is a rich country. They have the money, so they will just raise the dikes. So there's not necessarily a danger of flooding in this, as long as we keep doing what we're doing, which is fighting the water. And the Netherlands has the best anti-flooding expertise in the world. So, but of course, the best thing we can do, of course, is fighting climate change so that we can stop it from happening in the first place. And yeah, hopefully that will happen after this election.
And here I got my hopes up that those really good Dutch football players will join Germany.
Actually, I'm below sea level right now. As we speak, I'm below sea level.
That would be disturbing for me. I do not like heights, but I could not live under sea level. That's disturbing. Really, really disturbing. Michael Brandner is asking, do you have voting computers that can be hacked as easily as ours?
But no, we don't vote with computers. Oh, that's actually one thing I forgot to mention, right? The whole voting system of coronavirus.
Yes, so, and why? Oh, that's something I forgot to ask you when we started. Why do you vote in the middle of the week and not at the weekend, like every normal human being would do?
I'm actually not even sure about that. I would not.
We in Germany, we have a whole culture around going to vote on a Sunday. we do not use our work time to go and partake in the democratic system. We do that on our free time.
Yeah, no. So basically, in the Netherlands, we don't use electronic voting. I think they tried it once in 2006 and it failed. There was a scandal. So we vote with paper, which is the safest way. The other thing is that with coronavirus, what they've basically done is that there's going to be 3 days of voting. So the official election day is Wednesday, March 17th. But you can also vote on Monday and Tuesday, especially the people who are part of the vulnerable groups. You can also vote by post if you are over the age of 70. So they are taking basically measures to ensure that the vote will be safe.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Can young people vote by post? Because we have that in Germany for every voter.
Check on this, but I don't. They might have changed it, but I don't think so. I think that it's only old people.
Okay, something to change in the Netherlands as well, because we can do it if we ask for it. You can vote by post if you're 18.
Wow. Yeah, no, so basically it's going to be a three-day election. The troubling part is that this party that I mentioned earlier, Forum for Democracy, which is spreading coronavirus conspiracy theories, they also took another page out of Trump's book. They suggested that the election might be not trustworthy.
You want to fraud your government by voting badly?
And on top of that, he called for the creation of a civilian army. Like a people's army. Like he would say that it's metaphorical, like, oh, we should rally. But it kind of sounded like he was basically doing like Trump and calling on people to, you know, I don't know. We saw what happened.
What are they supposed to do?
I don't know. Just form a army.
Because
of course he can't say it directly, but you know, if you tell people that the government is lying to you,
there's a thing in Germany. You can go to the voting places after the election and look while they count the votes, but you are not supposed to say anything or do anything. You're just stay there and look on and be quiet. But you have the right to do that. In America, I could see what they doing. What they were doing was pretty much disturbing the vote. And that's something that's dangerous, I think, for democracy.
Yeah, I know. So this party has really, I think, really embraced, actually much more than Wilders, the more crazy parts of what Trump was doing about, you know, denying the vote, telling people to go to the Capitol, all of these kind of things. This party is actually starting to embrace some of these things. So, I mean, you never know. I mean, they don't have much support, but you never know what a couple of crazy people can do. That's basically the voting system. And I will be voting on Wednesday.
So why are you disturbing your work week with voting in a democracy and not do it on a Sunday? Like every...
I don't make the rules. I don't make the rules.
So you do not know why that is on Thursday?
I have no clue, actually.
Okay.
I have no clue.
Maybe you know the next time, because I think in Germany it has something to do with the fact that we are working during the week.
Yeah, it would probably be a better idea. But I think you can vote until quite late. I think until like even 9 o'clock at night or even later. And I think also because of the curfew, what they're doing is there will still be a curfew. But if you are voting, the curfew doesn't apply to you, basically.
So you can have a party and tell everyone, oh, no, I'm on the way to the vote.
Well, I mean, you have to show proof. So you have the voting paper thing that you bring to the voting station.
So you still can do a voting party on the way to the voting. I am sorry, but after a year, I need a party. I would be trustworthy in that system.
No, hopefully we will get it soon. Like they're considering allowing concerts where if you either have a vaccination or you do a rapid coronavirus test, that you can get inside and do whatever you want. So I hope they implement that as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and I'm getting depressive just hearing that because my government is not doing well in any of those two. And if I see any pictures of partying in the Netherlands, I'm going crazy. Okay, but I'm pretty sure I will see pictures of old people partying in rural France before I'm getting out of my curfew. So, what else? Ah, yes. Lastly, do you have a message for my listeners?
A message. I would say, I don't know, watch the Dutch elections closely, and in your own election, don't look at the last few months. Don't look at only coronavirus response. Look at the next 4 years.
Look at the coronavirus response in Germany.
I mean, look at it as well, but don't only vote based on trust in leaders, but vote on the policies and vote on the future, not on the present.
I thank you very much. And I hope I did not botch this conversation with my poor English. And maybe we can talk again in a few months when our election is happening in Germany and when you are halfway through the coalition talks.
Yes, once we have a government.
Thank you very much, Simba. All right. Bis bald. Ciao.
Cheers.